You know the sort of things I find incredible?
Go on. Mirrors.
Shambles.
Series 2, episode 42 of The Ricky Gervais Show on XFM 104.9. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
This is the Carly Pilk Boys. Zach, what's your Heat Magazine-style headline for this show?
Hallmark implicated into 20 years worth of setting up natural disasters, tragedies, and terrorist attacks.
Interflora behind it all of the world's tragedies. How funny, we're listening to this episode right as The Crown, the latest season of The Crown, debuts, which covers this thing, doesn't it?
I didn't make that connection, but I made... There was something else I was talking about that I felt like it was very timely. I was like, oh, we've just been talking about a similar thing. I forget what it was, but I'm sure we'll
come across it. They talk about supermarket checkouts again, or rather the embarrassment of asking for things at the supermarket and being embarrassed about buying toilet paper.
Mm.
All things you don't have to worry about.
Yeah, well, maybe
kids
that
these days.
I could have been, maybe I was thinking about that in regards to the toilet paper shortages during COVID.
Interesting. Yes. Where are we at with that? Are they back in stock?
I think we're good.
Okay, we're good.
I think that's the only thing you can buy now. I think we have shortages of everything else.
That's right. Fresh food, hard to get a hold of. Toilet paper, got it for days. Broadcast 14th of June 2003, this episode. Number one in the UK charts. We have a brand new one, Evanescence, Bring Me to Life. A true mega, mega, mega hit.
My friend went to his first concert to see Evanescence.
Wow.
He didn't know anything about concert culture.
Did he rock?
No. So he, at the end of the show, he's like, that was weird. They didn't play Bring Me to Life, their biggest song. So he's walking out and he's on the back stairs and he hears, like, from inside the theater, the crowd going wild, and then this kick in and he's like, what? He had never heard of an encore.
He didn't know what an encore was. How embarrassing. Well, he's got a chance to redeem himself. I looked up, Evanescence, still a band. They're playing in Brussels on the 21st of November. Then Frankfurt, Germany, the Netherlands, Luxembourg. They're heading all over Europe. I can't see the UK on there, but surely, right? This song on YouTube... So uploaded 12 years ago. So what's that? 2010. So 7 years after it came out, it's got 1.1 billion views.
Yeah. As much as it's fun to make fun of, which I do enjoy.
There's nothing inside.
It is a banger. It's good. It's good. You got to sing along.
You can, after this song, you can rest on your laurels for the rest of your life.
It was,
career.
They were, that was still an era where one song could set you up for life.
Name another Evanescence song.
There was one other half hit.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, I forget what it was.
Okay,
though.
I'm going to look it up real quick. Let's just enjoy a bit more. It's a good thing about being Patreon only. I feel much more okay about just letting a song play. Do you reckon you'll know the name if you hear it?
Yeah, go through some of their most...
My Immortal?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure I'll recognize it when I hear it.
This is like the same era as like, POD?
Remember? Oh, hell yes. Remember that? This particular type of commercial nu metal.
Yeah.
It's got NU.
But then it was like...
wow, this one's got 874 million.
I remember that feeling really edgy. Both Evanescence, I guess, because they wore black, wore eye makeup.
Linkin Park were part of that.
Linkin Park, yeah.
Did you ever listen to a band called Finch?
No, never.
They weren't, no. They're not. Oh, this fucking song. All right, let's skip it.
Yeah, you know this one.
Surely this is from... No. This feels like it's from the soundtrack to a Twilight movie, but yes. It came out a few years before.
It might also be on the Twilight soundtrack, though.
All right, this one's not a banger. One more. I'm going to try Going Under. They're all off the same album. Oh, yes.
Yeah, see, there was a few there. You know a few.
But look at the album, the cover art. It's her looking deep into the camera with very like it's all black and blue with a
This is a few years after The Matrix. It's around Lord of the Rings.
The emergence of emo. Like yeah, but like
the elves and the Matrix guys and Evanescence. I feel like there's a big Venn diagram where they all cross over.
It created a petri dish out of which Evanescence emerged and a handful of other shithouse bands who we all secretly really enjoy listening to. Yes, they did have it. Yeah, right. Well, you've got, you know, a third of a set. You've got three hits, one at the start, one in the middle, one at the end, and then redo their biggest hit at the end, Bring Me to Life.
I don't think if you have a hit, by the way, if you're a one hitter, don't wait to the encore. Don't you think?
I think this is the best question I've ever asked a musician.
Yeah, okay.
And it was a lead singer of Hoodoo Gurus, who are like Australian, you know, pretty well known and been around for a long time. It's like, where do you decide? How do you decide where to play What's My Scene in the set list?
They had,
and he said they move it around.
Yeah, right.
But what do you think?
That's not, but they're not one hit wonders. They had a few others.
They had a few. Yeah, a handful. Yeah, yeah.
I think you got to end the main set with your big one.
Okay. You don't come out. Because
I think the encore is leaving it for the encore is pretentious. Because it's like, we know we're going to do an encore. And doing it straight up, like it's like you skyrocket in energy. Like, can you imagine a band coming out and like, because everyone's just murmuring and then they're like, welcome Evanescence. Yeah. And they just come out with,
wake me up.
But then everyone at the end of that 3 minutes 30, you'd be like, oh, well, we've got to be here for another hour.
Yeah.
And we're not, so you need... I've heard that Deep Purple would play Smoke on the Water as an encore once, but they had a time where the band was having a lot of arguments with each other, and at one stage during the set, they got into such an argument the guitarist left and none of them could play guitar. So they had to play that riff on piano or on keyboard.
Wow, it's one of the most basic riffs in the world.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they couldn't sort it out.
Yeah, I don't know why someone just couldn't pick up. Maybe he took all the guitars with him. It was like, I'm taking my ball and I'm going.
Do you hang around? Like, you would send everyone home on a massive high if you did it in the encore. Or you'd play it first and then everyone thinks, well, I've got my money's worth, I can go home now.
And then the band might be like,
maybe we could finish early.
You know, like global bands, their encores are like 20, 25 minutes long.
Too long.
Like sometimes like 3 or 4 songs.
Too long. I used to hear, oh, it's amazing, Prince. Oh, I think Steve even says it in the XFM show, Bruce Springsteen. It was amazing. He played for 3 hours nonstop and he says it about Prince as well. In my head, I go, way too long. Way too long. Make it a tight 50 minutes, 45, an hour tops.
I heard recently in an interview with Paul McCartney, the Beatles used to play 25-minute sets or 28-minute sets.
Yeah,
like in the early days. Yeah, when they were very, very short. Those poppy 2-minute songs, they'd just pump 10 of them out. And like they were on a mixed bill of like, because like there were other bands or other acts. Like maybe they were like comedians or magicians or something. I don't know.
And is this your card? I got the impression. Yes, it is. Oh, my God. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And now the Beatles.
How are we going to follow that, George? I don't know, Paul.
Yeah, I don't know.
Remember Psy, Gangnam Style?
Yeah.
He came out for the big day out at the height of Gangnam Style fame. He played it 3 times. He opened it in the middle and then his encore was all Gangnam Style.
I like Psy. I reckon he knew what's up.
Oh, yeah. What do you mean? What do you mean?
I don't think he took himself too seriously.
No.
I think he knew that he had this once-in-a-lifetime experience. I think he already had a career.
He'd been doing it for 10 years in
Korea. So I think he was just along for the ride. Go on whatever show you want. I'll do the dance.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a great time. And I think that's the best attitude to have.
So movies released the day before this show went to air. Igby Goes Down, starring the Culkin, who's in Succession.
Yeah, who directed that?
I don't know, but it followed in the wake of that sort of Wes Anderson.
That's what I was going to say. It was
vibe.
It's not Noah Baumbach, is it?
Oh, it might be. Well, we can find
it. I've heard of it for some reason, haven't seen it.
I remember watching it because I was around 14, 15, just in earlier stages. I'd seen the Royal Tenenbaums and Rushmore and being like, I want indie comedies. Mm. So I remember watching it and thinking it was okay. I actually can't really remember anything about it. I know Susan Sarandon's in it. Burr Steers, your favorite director.
Never mind.
Your favorite writer-director, Burr Steers. Why? You know, of what? Pulp Fiction? Oh, he plays Roger in Pulp Fiction.
I don't know why I've heard of it then. Who wrote it?
He went on to direct Burr Spears. He went on to direct Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. 17 again.
Maybe I've just heard of it because I've looked up the Culkin brothers' career.
Ah, yeah.
That might be it.
So Dumb and Dumberer, When Harry Met Lloyd, was released the day before.
Is that the follow-up?
It's the prequel.
Oh.
That came out in 2003. Got to say, at the time, I haven't revisited it. I quite enjoyed it. They're doing a good, particularly the guy who plays Jim Carrey's character, is doing a really good imitation of what Jim Carrey did.
Yeah.
And the day of the show, so on the Saturday, the movie Crackerjack was released.
Ah.
Australian comedy written by and starring Mick Molloy, a radio and comedy legend here in Australia.
Debatably one of the... Well, not debatably. It's definitely one of the best comedy films produced in Australia.
Never seen it.
You never seen Crackerjack?
Never seen Crackerjack. I've never seen The Dish from start to finish either.
I haven't seen The Dish either.
Got to do it.
Crackerjack's really good.
Okay.
It's like what I like about it, and I think this is a lesson when you're making a low-budget film. And it's not even that low-budget, but just low-budget compared to Hollywood. Is like, pick a story that happens in the real world.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's about what happens at a bowls club. A young man wants to use parking in the area that's reserved for the bowls club. So he keeps getting fined. So he realizes that buying a bowls membership is the cheapest way of doing it. So he buys a membership to the club so he can park on the street. But then, lo and behold, as it goes on, he starts getting swept up in the cheap beers at the bowls club with the lovable characters. And then does he help them save the bowls club?
Watch out. Oh, so it becomes a bit of a dodgeball. We got to save this.
What I don't mind.
Do they win the cash in a bowl off?
I forget exactly what happens, but it's something like that, yeah. What I don't mind about that is like sometimes just don't reinvent the wheel. Like get a story that's tried and true. Add jokes to it.
Yeah.
Change the setting.
That premise is one of the most low stakes premises I've ever heard, and I love it.
The Bowls Club.
What gets the story moving is he's trying to avoid getting parking tickets.
Yeah.
It's not a race against time to save the world.
No. Well, he's like a lazy, drinking, smoking.
He's Mick Molloy.
Yeah.
He's playing himself. He's like Ricky. Doesn't exactly stretch but himself.
He's actually not too different to Ricky in a way.
He can't, yeah.
No,
yeah.
Kind of middle aged, slobby man.
Although he didn't undergo the big transformation that Ricky did. He didn't join a membership, join a gym and get himself all fit, ready for the Golden Globes to roast everyone.
He's very funny in it, Mick Molloy, the way he interacts with the bowls.
I've got to watch it.
It's great.
Quick bit of Patreon business. Following up on last week's episode, remember we were talking about the singles codes in supermarkets, if there was one? Amber, the Richie Forbes, has gotten in touch saying the trolley code, in inverted commas, for singles at my local supermarket was a pineapple in your basket on a Wednesday night.
I have heard, isn't the pineapple a symbol of swinging?
If you know, leave a comment below.
Because pineapples are all through Bluey, right?
Notorious and swinging cartoon
dogs. Well, I think it's in Bluey. I don't know why, actually, but I think it's possibly because Brisbane and Queensland, Southeast Queensland is known for pineapple growing.
Yeah.
So I think they have some type of connection to that because it's very autobiographical to the guy's life who made it. But I went through the Bluey house when it was in Brisbane, and so they had pineapple stuff everywhere. But all these other people were going like, pineapples? Ooh, what does that mean? What's the family up to? And I had to look it up because I didn't know. And I was like, oh, I bet they didn't know that when they put pineapples all through the house. Or maybe they did. I don't know.
It sounds like if that is a code, you've got yourself another pretty good little conspiracy theory video.
Yeah, actually, I didn't even think of that. That's a good point.
Bluey's parents are swingers.
But I think like you put a pineapple in your cart. I don't think it's you cover your house in pineapple. Uh-huh. related artwork.
Just they keep getting people knocking off the door. Hey, so when's the party?
I saw a pineapple through the window.
We've got a new EP we need to give a nickname to. Now, I did reach out to this guy. It's our first Icelandic EP. I reached out to this guy for a pronunciation guide, and he hasn't gotten back to me. So, Tetsur Gudmundsson, we're going to pursue. We're just going to have a best bet, a good faith. We're going to try our best. Apologies if we pronounce your name incorrectly.
So, what's the surname?
Gudmundsson. Hey, I've actually got a pronunciation found for Tetsur. I'm pretty sure that's it because listen to this.
Tetsur.
Oh, Tetsur.
Tetsur.
Tetsur Gudmundsson.
I reckon Gudmundsson. So, I reckon... Dasun mean is like a version of like
Dasun
of the of, you know like of, I reckon yes. That's the family son connection of,
yeah.
And then surely Gudmund is Goodman like well, good man surely.
So what's your
I don't know. I'm just doing, I'm just interested in the origins of last names
from the personal name. This is from Google. From the personal name Gudmund from Old Norse Guthmunda. Composed of the elements of Guth, meaning God,
way off,
and Mundr, meaning protection. Whoa, so
way off.
So Tetsur, the protector, Gudmundsson is an option, but hearing this pronunciation,
Tetsur,
doing what I do with my you know English is my only language, Tetsur. I thought tater, like American tater tots. What we call them in Australia, potato gems, Tetsur, the gem, Gudmundsson.
I like the gem.
Playing only the gems.
Uncovering gems.
Here you go. Here's an uncovered gem for you. Cool. Playing for the first time. It's Katy Perry, Fireworks. All right, Tetsur, the gem, Gudmundsson. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for signing on to be an EP. Turns out, it looks like no one spotted the Office reference in episode 3 of Childish Dino yet.
I watched it. Couldn't figure it out.
What? There's two.
Well, because Dino goes to the office.
Yes.
Is that why?
That's not it. He's in an office.
It's more specific than that.
There's a visual reference, and there's two of them very quickly. There's the one that I'm thinking of is the one I'll prioritize because that was more... No, they were both overt, but one is a bit more sneaky. It's very clear. It's right behind the character. There's two references... In the same scene.
I noticed, is it on a whiteboard?
Yes.
Okay, so I noticed that, looked at it, didn't get the reference.
Okay.
What
is
it?
It's a deep cut.
Okay.
If go to @ChildishDino, watch episode 3. If you can tell me what the Office reference is, I'll take either of them, but there's one I'll give more points to than the other. Just leave a message. Message us on the Instagram or on the Patreon. Actually, on the Patreon's good because this is where people are listening to it. And we'll send you a copy of the Carl's Childhood print, the little postcard size one. If you already have one, I'll send you something else.
You know, the interesting thing is I noticed that whiteboard and I thought looked at the couple of things that was on it and I thought, oh, they've played it pretty straight there. Because often that's an opportunity to put something in. Which you did actually do in the end.
Yeah.
I just missed
it's a deep cut reference.
Yeah, okay.
Unlike episode 1 where I really wanted episode 1 to start with a joke, like a visual joke. Because that's why I love The Simpsons, how you read the signs.
Yeah.
And they're always funny. Yeah. So that's why like the first thing you see is the sign of the primary school and it says 4 days since handball related injury.
Oh yeah, great.
Let's get into the Air Check Series 2 episode 42. In break 1, Carl is laughing off mic. But he can do it. He can laugh. And Ricky got a letter. Stood out to me that he got a letter asking if he could make Ricky laugh. And he's got the giggles because the CD's not working.
Imagine sitting down to write to a radio show. Yeah. Get the typewriter out. Ding.
Dear Ricky, ding. Please make Carl laugh. So a disastrous start to the show. In break 2, we find out Carl is leaving early today because he's going away on holiday.
Outrageous.
Completely outrageous. These days, you would just voice track the last couple of breaks.
But, yeah. Why?
Well, he's exposed later on that it's because he's booked a train. And he says, well, if I don't get this, I won't get to Cornwall. And Ricky's like, there's other trains. Are you kidding me? There's not the one train a day to that part of the country.
I was thinking during this, I'm like, did Carl invent quiet quitting? The Gen Z new fad.
Which is what exactly? Where you just stop,
Might be millennials responding. Actually. I don't know who invented it. It's
you stop trying.
No, you just do what you're paid to do. So none of this, we're a family.
Isn't that called doing your job?
Yeah, that's what young people would say. But boomers are like, no. It's like, you need to stay back and do extra work. You need to grind. You need to put in the effort we put in.
That's a, is that your boomer impression? I love it.
I don't know who it is. Someone came out of it.
And so it's called quiet quitting.
Yeah, it's just doing the bare minimum. Doing not the bare minimum. Well, I guess that's what they would say on Talkback Radio. These lazy millennials. However, if it was a young person saying it, they'd say, I'll do what I'm paid to do. I'm not going to come in on the weekend when you're not paying me. I'm not going to stay late when you're not paying me. I'm not going to be manipulated into you saying that we're all a team here.
Yeah.
You know, we cover each other. It doesn't look like you're doing much covering, boss.
Yeah.
It looks like you're getting paid five times as much as us and doing less work.
Yeah. I mean, unless your surname's in the title of the company, you're there to do a job.
I used to get annoyed. I worked at this place once where the boss said to me, I was like the lowest, I was like 20. So I was getting paid less than minimum wage. On the first day, I got a pay rise because they told me, quote, HR said we couldn't pay you that low. And then,
oh, that's kind of you. Thank you.
I know. And so I was talking to the boss once and he was trying to like be a hero. And he's like, look, we don't have levels here. And he's like, when like stock comes in, I'm out in the back truck with everyone else unpacking it. And I was like, no, you're getting paid three times as much, four, five times as much to lead. You stay in here and you lead. That's your job. Don't go out. That's a dumb business decision. That's costing the company five times as much to have you unpacking it. No, you pay us $20 an hour to unpack it. That's like, do you know what I mean? Yeah, I was like so annoyed. I'm like, no, if there's no different levels, why don't you get paid what I get paid?
Yeah, yeah. That's ridiculous.
Don't get me started on capitalism.
I'm now thinking of all the times I've heard. Luckily, like not too much in my personal experience, but people who work in like marketing and sales sort of roles, and they're like, look, if you're not passionate about selling airtime on a radio station, you shouldn't be here. It's like, are you kidding? We're all not just here just to like do a job and get paid and support ourselves. They actually think this is our lives, our passion.
I worked in this HR consultancy firm for 2 or 3 years when I was 18 to 21, and I still couldn't tell you what they did today. They like wrote programs, I think, to like so that you can manage your HR department. Anyway, they were bought by a European country that I still see today.
They were bought by a country?
Company. The other day I filled out like an employment form and it was on the header of this company that bought this company ages ago. Anyway, it was a young guy that came in a suit. One of the first times I saw someone wearing like an open collar suit. He has an all-staff meeting.
This guy's changing the game.
Yeah, so he's come over from overseas. He's called all the staff into a room and he did that speech like, if this isn't your passion,
okay, that's maybe actually what I'm remembering, because I think you have told us about this before.
And I remember people like whispering to each other. And
yeah.
Like, I think I'm just going to walk out.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think this is anyone's passion.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the things I'm remembering is you telling me about that, because yeah, right, I can't believe that. Also, did you just drop a little nugget in there? You just signed an employment thing?
No. Oh, no. It was for sometimes companies aren't set up for contractors. So it was just like a one-off job. But like sometimes you have to apply to be an employee. Like they won't just pay an invoice. You have to like go through their employment process so they can pay one invoice.
Oh, they need to set you up in their payroll system.
But even though you're only ever going to do one job for them, it can be frustrating.
Yeah. Well, that's the difference between us. I've never been a contractor in radio, and that you've only been
separate, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's even more annoying if you are just doing a random freelance job and they have to put you on the staff.
Yeah. That happens for the big companies. That happens fairly regularly.
Are you going to go to the Christmas party?
Or you have to, at a minimum, you have to set up as a new supplier.
Ugh.
And I'm like, guys, this is a one-off payment. Surely you can build something into the complicated program.
Yeah.
It's like a one-off payment.
I've done that a little bit when I was a few years ago obsessed with trying to get gag cartoons published. And then you would have a breakthrough. But then it would unlock a whole world of complications, particularly if they were international, because you have to register yourself as a vendor and then supply all this information, and then they send you a check which you can't cash anywhere. You had to find, like, I had to find one bank that will accept American checks, and then set up an account with them, and then take it in person. Really was not worth the effort. So they do ask what Carl actually enjoys, because they don't know, and all they could come up with was Man U and moaning. And Carl, says why he's moaning this morning.
I'll tell you why.
Go on.
Because you brought a song in at 10 to 1.
Yeah.
With a load of effing and jeffing in it.
Yeah.
And saying, can you edit this?
Yeah.
I love effing and jeffing.
How would he have even done that? So if he has a CD, would he play it in real time? Would
he record it into a program, maybe take time codes of when the swearing is.
No, but he'd be like, they would have had an editor, so he could just put the beeps in.
But I'm thinking, because he is an audio producer, usually they'd record in, he'd have like the session open and you'd see it recording in, you'd see the waveform.
Oh, yeah, right.
And while he's listening, he'd be taking note, and so that he can just go through, all right, 1:30,
or putting a marker in, maybe.
Yeah. That's what I imagine.
And then what? Would he burn it back onto a CD?
Yeah, probably.
Wow.
Yeah. God, remember those days?
No. Not really.
A bit unfair of Steve, I reckon. I'm on Carl's
totally.
Side. Totally. Yeah.
And also it made me think, like, these days, if you're on the radio, all you have to think about is talking. Like the stuff you're going to talk about. I'm like, back then they had to think about what music they're going to play. They had to think about it had to be censored.
Mm.
Other people do that now.
I went into 4ZZZ, the community station here, because Jack, our mate Jack, does the breakfast show on Tuesday mornings, and he had me in to talk about Childish Dino.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in there?
No.
4ZZZ? It's so cool. Like, it is truly kept together with duct tape, but in the most charming, character-rich way. There's no inch of wall that doesn't have a poster or drawing all over it. And he took me into their CD and vinyl like library, stunk of mothballs, but again, just a very, I don't know, this very satisfying musk. And it just was a throwback to those times. And he told me about how, because they've been around for a long time, there's still original first edition vinyls of like Nirvana's first album.
Oh, wow.
And in 1989. And then if you pull it out.
What's that worth?
So Jack was saying that there's records in here that are worth like money. And he said that what they would do, and if you pull it out, you can see it. He didn't show me, but he said that the DJs on ZZZ back then would write like notes on the cover to be like whether or not it has swearing. And someone apparently wrote on that one, this track is radio friendly. And then someone responded saying, radio friendly is it is not a term we should be worried about, and then wrote like a blog post about
because we're like we're edgy man.
Yeah, exactly. I immediately thought that is such community radio. Strong opinions.
Yeah.
Very clicky.
Especially when 4ZZZ is like an alternative voice. And so there would be people with strong ideological ideas of what it should be.
Yes. And because
so you'd be criticized for sounding too commercial.
Yes, exactly. So found that very interesting. Yeah, it hasn't been a radio library anywhere near a radio station that I've worked at.
Yeah, there was one at
B105
when I was there.
The old building?
Yeah. So it was just a hallway of, like, there would have been thousands of CDs. But I would go through them pretty regularly when I was bored. Nothing good. Like a lot of
memorable.
A lot of novelty albums.
Did you find
a lot of these like compilations that they talk about?
Best air guitar songs ever. I do like that Carl describes the show as a doddle. I like that word, doddle. And that his real job is way harder. I Googled the use of doddle. You know how Google, look up and it has a graph? It's exploded since the 1950s.
Oh, really?
It's a real, if you invested in doddle stock early.
What is a doddle?
Something that's easy and trivial.
Okay.
Carl can't wait to go on his holiday. He's going to Monkey World. I looked it up. I believe the place he's talking about is still operational. It's called Wild Futures Monkey Sanctuary. Lots of five-star reviews. People seem to love it and have a great time. I wanted to look at the one-star reviews. This one is says, tiny, staff kept lecturing about not having pet monkeys as pets. Cafe was vegetarian, which they don't advertise. Would have taken sandwiches if I'd have known.
You got to get your lunch cut meats in.
It makes me think this guy was asking if he could keep a monkey as a pet.
Like, what did you expect?
They kept lecturing us. But what
did you think, that they were going to be pro monkeys as pets?
Yeah.
Like, on your way out. Yeah. Which one do you want to take home?
Would anyone like to take a little chimp home? In break three, Ricky lost 400 cash. I relate to that feeling, and I might have even picked it up from this show, like so many things, that when you lose something and then you find it again, the feeling is it's now free because you had lost it.
Yeah.
And you'd let it go.
Yeah, sure. I understand where he's coming from. It's funny, Ricky's... yeah, I guess that is a relatable feeling, losing money and then finding it. I'm like, what are the tradies thinking listening to this? The guys working hard every day, breaking their backs, doing work. We hear about the media elite.
Yeah.
Dropping $400, finding it again. Oh, no, he never found it.
He doesn't find it again.
Well, then I guess that's his donation to the city, isn't it?
Yes.
Someone along the way, whether it was a cabbie or the next person in, found $400.
I once got $100 cash out, and then I was just completely mindless thinking about something else. And you know how it gives you your card first?
Yeah.
And then the cash? It gave me my card, and I just walked away. So the way I rationalized it was, look, I've given someone $100.
Well, you know what it does?
It was around Christmas. I was like, it's a little Christmas bonus for forward. Some stranger.
Well, that's nice of you. Do you know the ATM will suck it back in?
But not give it back, right, to your account?
No. So then you can claim it. So it has a process of you could go to the bank and say, hey, I never got that money. Whether or not they'd give it to you, because I'm just thinking, how could you prove that you never? Well, because it didn't come out of the ATM. There you go. So they would have a time and a place where you had the transaction. And then when they do a reconciliation of the money inside the ATM, they'd go, there's an extra $100 here that was never taken out. Yeah, see, that makes sense.
Maybe.
No, so that does make sense.
I could potentially call Westpac and say, in 2011, statute of limitations.
I was walking to the train station once when I was doing early morning radio, so it was 5 in the morning, and this guy, he was a dead street, but it was like a commercial area. Like, there was lots of shops, but they weren't open yet. And this guy who was worse for wear was standing in front of ATM, and then I'm walking on the other side of the road and he just starts walking straight towards me and I'm like, here we go. And so I subtly take a battle stance. I'm like, he might attack me. I might have to run.
Did you put your hands up in a karate pose?
No, just my legs. I separate my legs to be like,
you grounded yourself.
Yeah, if he comes and charges me, I need to be ready. But he comes over and he's stumbling. And once I saw him stumbling, I thought he's probably not going to attack me. But he's like, man, my the ATM just stole my money. And I was like, what? And he's like, the ATM, it ate my money. And I was like, sorry, man, I never stop. That's the first rule when someone accosts you. I just kept walking. I'm like, sorry, man. You know, I had to look it up afterwards to figure out what was going on because I'd never heard of this happening before. I think he was in such a daze and so slow to process what was happening in front of him. It spat out the money. And I don't think he was fast enough to react to get it. But the time is 45 seconds. It's a long time. And so, I don't really understand how he had the presence to remember his PIN and get through the transaction and then just be so distracted. Anyway, but I got through it and I'm sure he could have gone to the bank later that day.
But did you just... you never broke stride...
I was just like,
sorry, you got to go to work.
I was like, man, I don't work for the bank. What do you want me to do? What are you? Are you trying to get me into this? Do you need two people to rock the ATM? Do you a vending machine trying to get it
out? Did he float out? Could you maybe just give me money?
Maybe he would have.
He just told you this piece of information.
Yeah.
He didn't ask anything of you.
You know what? For all these years, I wondered why he would even tell me that next. But I reckon that was probably next.
But I think that's natural to not find out. Don't, you know, they say when you're getting kidnapped, never, like, if someone's trying to kidnap you, never go to the second location. Like, completely, like, don't go, okay, I'm just going to do what they say now and then sort it out. Never go to the second location. I feel like that if you have an encounter with a stranger on the street, never go to the second part of the conversation.
Well, like, I feel like also that's my tactic for, like, what would you call them? Like hawkers or, like, you know, people who are selling stuff in the middle of the street.
Hey, how you doing today?
Yeah, never stop.
Yeah.
Never slow down. You can just be polite.
Smile and nod.
Yeah, go like, hello. No, thank you. Just keep walking.
One time someone said, hey, do you want to save the world?
I say no. Nope.
I hated that so much.
I often just say no.
No, not really.
Not today, thank you.
Yeah.
No. One guy said to me once.
Trees and starving children.
I walked across the bridge in Brisbane River and he was on one side.
Wait, which bridge?
The bridge across, I don't know.
Like the Goodwill or something? Well, who sets themselves up on a bridge?
No, they set themselves up on one side. And he goes like, do you want to save the river or something? I said, not today. And then I came back over the bridge half an hour later and he goes, now that you've seen the state of the river, are you going to do something about it? I said, nope.
Mad world, don't it?
Nope. La 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 la. Throw your rubbish in the river and keep walking.
No, it's like, it just annoys me because a lot of the time, you know, like door knockers, I don't know about people setting up in the street, but door knockers are third parties. They don't work for the charity, but they talk like they do. So they're just getting paid. They work for a third party organization that the charity engages. Like door knockers are us. It's like, hey, can you give us 100 door knockers?
Sure.
Right? And they'll go around and do it. But then they talk to you as if they started the charity.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm like, mate, you're not giving any money to it. You're just working a job like everyone else.
Yes. I never thought about that, that there was a middleman involved. Thankfully, being in an apartment, I saw on TikTok
that's a good point.
That because you live in a house, we don't get door knockers. I love it.
We get them all the time.
All the time, really.
And they, like, I put up a sign
saying, come on in.
No hawkers, they still come up. They were like, they just don't leave. I've had to contact the companies before and be like, hey, that guy was really inappropriate. Like, he wouldn't leave our balcony.
Ugh.
And then he started questioning my wife. It was about, like, heart disease. And they go, like, their first question, because they're trying to build a connection. And then they have, like, a detailed, proven script, right? Yeah. So it's, like, a script designed as a sales script designed to get you in. So it's, like, they always, their first question is, like, do you know anyone affected by this? Because they're trying to build a connection. And my wife was like, we already donate to a heart disease foundation or something like that. And the guy goes, which one? And she's like, oh, I'm not going to tell you that. And he goes, well, we're the only one, so it has to be us. And it's like, mate, get lost. But You've come unannounced to my house.
Yeah.
I haven't asked for this. You're showing up and trying to make me feel bad for not giving to you when I didn't even know this existed 10 seconds ago.
But wait, can you admit here and now on this podcast, your wife was lying?
I actually don't know what she was talking about. Maybe it might not have been heart disease. I don't know what it was. But I was like, do we?
We've donated to something in the general body vicinity.
But this is what, like, my mother-in-law always gives money to him. But, and she's a good person, but it's not, I don't think it's out of the goodness of her heart. Like all the donations, I think you have made it so awkward that the person's like, how much is it going to be for you to go
away? To get you out of here.
Yeah, that's
it. And I'll deal with it later.
That's what it's designed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, because I almost, like, when I was 18, I came close to doing one of those kind of jobs.
Yeah, so
they work on a commission basis. So they are desperate.
Okay, I was wondering about asking that because I thought maybe my strategy from going forward, because I don't want to be rude, but sometimes when they don't leave, I'm like, you have to go now or I'm going to call the police. Like they just don't take no as an answer. I have been thinking, I'm like, I wonder if a tactic is like, hey, do you work with commission? See, I might start working on a script of my own. So I go, hey, do you work for commission? And if they say yes, I go, it's in your best interest to move on really quickly because your time is valuable.
Yes.
And you're wasting time here because I am not going to give you money. So it's in your best interest to move on to the next house as fast as you can, or else you're going to waste 10 minutes doing your speech here.
Yes.
That's do you reckon really that will work?
Please do that and report back. See how it goes. yeah, that's that. I mean, that's, but then it would be, I would be interested to hear if they then push on anyway and be like, well, it sounds like I got a challenge on my hands.
I just get so annoyed because it's like, I feel like, you know, I'm never wearing a shirt. Like, I have to run and get a shirt. I'm like out on the balcony. I'm like in a daze. Yeah. I'm like, man, my kid's sleeping. Yeah. I'm like, I was trying to like watch TV on the couch. Give me a brochure. I'll peruse it in my own time.
Yeah. Circle back. Come back later. Actually, don't. Would you hand in, if you found £400, let's say $400, would you hand it in an envelope on the street? Would you hand it in to the nearest
I guess it depends place? Where it was. Like if it was in a built-up area and it was obvious, if it was like, oh, the person probably just came out of that shop, then yes.
I wonder if it was like... If it's in the doorway, you know, of
if it was at place. The beach or something, I mean, where would you even hand it in?
Yeah. I don't know if I would. I'd look for signs of ownership, but if it was just cash in an envelope, I think I'd be like, drug money.
Mine now.
Untraceable.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the most amount of money you've ever found?
Not much, like $15 maybe. I think I might have found 50 once. But I did notice when I moved to Sydney, I lived in sort of a place with lots of share houses. But then I moved to a more affluent area in the eastern suburbs in a unit with like, you know, there was a bunch of us in the unit. But it was there was some like pretty wealthy private schools nearby. And I started to notice I was finding way more cash just out on walks, particularly near the schools. And I assumed it was probably kids who were being given cash and then losing it out of their pockets. And I was benefiting.
I have a friend who, not anymore, but used to, this is the most entitled thing ever in my opinion, used to throw his change in the bin because he didn't want to walk around with it. Mm. And he rationalized, this is remarkable, I haven't thought about this in 10 years. He rationalized that he was giving to the needy because he goes, well, they'll probably go through the bin. And I'm like, I don't think that's how it works.
I've seen them going through the bins. They come across a $2 coin.
But can you imagine being so... non-concerned about money that like you get change, by the way, not putting it in a tip jar or anything like that.
Yeah,
I'm going to throw it in the bin, not even recycling.
All you need to do is rifle through this hot garbage and you'll find 50 cents. You're welcome, doing my part.
It would have been better just to put it on the ground.
Yes,
just drop it on the pavement.
Someone who doesn't need it might have found it, Zach.
Right.
He's actually
but he's creating a bit of like they have to work.
Someone you only go through a bin if you really need to.
Yeah, or if you're really a garbage desperate. Man.
Yeah,
I think maybe that's a part of your job.
I do like this whole conversation about finding money and stuff. It does reveal where everyone lands on this.
Well, isn't it funny how Ricky's
a goody two shoes
goes against Steve.
Yeah, he's really like absolutely with the cash. With the ATM card, he would just hand it in. But Steve,
well, you can't take money from the ATM. That's a different. That's active versus passive.
That is this sort of vigilante lost and found. I'll make up the rules. So here it is: Steve's story of finding the purse, and he got nothing in return as a kid. That seemingly scarred him so badly that when he then later in life came across an ATM at a university that was still, the card was still in. What happened to that person, by the way? That he had to just run away mid-transaction. He saw that it was there and active, and this is what he decided to do.
I thought to myself, now then, I could just take that card out and hand it in, or I could teach them a small lesson.
Right.
And maybe give myself a reward, because last time I did that, I didn't get a reward. So if I give myself £30, then I'll take the card out.
30?
Give myself 30. Yeah.
You didn't really?
Well, I thought that's a good reward. And I went in, I handed the card in, I took
Steve,
that. Steve! And that's a little reward for me. And I'll tell you this, don't think it's evil, because I went in and I bought everyone a drink.
I like the ethical debate about like what's the right thing to do in that situation. I don't think I'll treat myself, but I see where he's coming from. I understand it. I don't think I necessarily would do the same thing. But hey, what can I say? I'm a good guy. I just caught myself going, well, look, in this hypothetical, I'd actually do the right thing. If I was around during the Nazis, I would be in the resistance.
Good to know. I'm taking notes. Every person I come across, I ask.
Yeah.
And if you say hey, you wouldn't be.
Germany in the late 1930s, what would you do? Carl would take so Carl is not quite as far as Steve. He would take 20 pounds. Is that, does that make it better? It's less than 30.
I think it's a, I have thought before, someone I knew, I didn't know, I just heard a story. You know, you hear in Australia sometimes the lifeguards save people's lives. Well, that actually happens all the time. That's kind of the idea. But you know, like you get rescued in the ocean and some people will go, I go back 6 months later and I thanked him.
Yes.
And it's like this real good feel-good story, which it's nice. It is a feel-good story. But I'm thinking like, but they saved your life. Like if this was the Middle Ages, you'd be indebted to them now until you saved their life. I don't think it's like such a, when Steve talks about not getting a reward, it is such a funny thing that it's like, you know, when people say, oh, they, well, I returned there and I gave him a heartfelt thank you. But it's like, but if it wasn't for them, you wouldn't be here. I'm like, that's, don't you think that's interesting?
It is.
I'm not saying that is wrong. I'm just saying it's interesting.
If we go surfing occasionally, haven't for a while. I can now. I'm all healed after my surgery. Are you suggesting that if I suddenly start drowning, because you are a more competent surfer than I am, and you save my life, without you, I would have drowned.
You work for me.
It'll cross
now.
Your mind. As we're paddling back and I'm gasping, you work for me now.
No, I'm just saying that is the basis of a lot of old stories, though, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. So I do like that Carl and Steve go back and forth about Steve's tightness for a bit, and they end on the joke that Steve one day hopes to splash out on a lady. In break four, they talk about the woman who's insured her looks. Here's a classic radio segment, reading a story from the news that's quite amusing.
Quirky.
The woman who's insured her looks and would be judged by a panel of builders. Now, quick Google, found an article from the Daily Mail dated 2003. Wife's £100,000 face. A woman who is worried her husband might leave her if she loses her looks has insured her face for £100,000. Nicole Jones of Bristol is paying £200 a year for the Face Safe policy, which will pay out if she is no longer deemed to be attractive. She took out the policy as a birthday present for her husband, Simon, who had always joked that he would leave her if she let herself go as she got older.
Classic funny joke.
Yeah, just listen to what a catch this guy sounds like. Mrs. Jones, 26, said, "When I met him, I knew he was the sort of person who likes good-looking ladies, but I've had a baby now and my figure isn't what it was before. He hated it when I was pregnant and my figure was changing and it was out of our control." She said if the policy did pay out, she would be able to use the money to hire a personal trainer or go to a health farm in a bid to get her looks back and lose weight. Although she added that she probably would not consider having plastic surgery. This article keeps going for a long, long time.
Those pesky babies. Taking up too much space.
Oh, my husband, he's such a charmer. He hated me when I was pregnant.
It's almost like
his child.
Yeah, with his child that he participated in the act of.
Oh, here's the part about the builders. In order to claim on the policy, Mrs. Jones will have to be declared unattractive by a panel of 10 builders. A test, she said, her husband appreciated being a builder himself.
As if what, like, builders have a special
eye. Yeah, I know builders, and tell you what.
What type of company would would accept this policy? Is it like a novelty insurance company? Or is this a thing you can do? Can you pitch ideas at them? Because I don't think they have a little booklet about this. It's not like income insurance, life insurance, looks insurance.
Novelty insurance brokers. There must be, right?
They're like, basically, you know how gamblers.
Yeah, how they have, I was going to say, in betting markets, they'll have novelty bets. Can I insure?
Because you hear about people insuring, like a hand model insuring their hand or something like that.
Yeah.
Or didn't someone, like musicians famously either insure their voices or didn't someone insure their ass?
Personal appearance service license. Personal appearance service. No. I know a Brisbane artist who insured her hand for $10 million.
What type of artist? Like
she does drawings.
And that's a policy that...
I just remember seeing it on Instagram ages ago saying, because she does make a huge amount of money, that, yeah, insured it for 10. Because if you lose a hand or something, all of a sudden you can't make an income.
Like George...
It sort of crazily does make sense.
It does make sense. That one, not the looks.
You've probably heard of singers insuring their vocal cords, athletes covering their arms and legs, and supermodels insuring facial features. If you've been wondering whether you can insure a body part, the answer is yes, but it isn't through your typical insurance company, nor is it a standard policy. I could read on, but I'll leave that to you if you're interested, listener.
So I wonder if this ever they had to pay out or...
Well, since then, yeah.
20 years on.
20 years on. If anyone knows, get in touch. Ricky and Steve talk about how they don't like the phrase, the wife. I'm just going to catch up with the wife, which made me think of, we've been dealing, Brooke and I, with Facebook Marketplace a bit, and we've noticed people love to say hubby on Marketplace, and it might just be the people that we're dealing with. The little pool table behind you.
Yeah, I was just looking at the new addition to the podcasting studio.
It seems to be, I have a 6 foot pool table in the office now because we're adults and we don't have children or
responsibilities. And at the moment it seems like that, because the pool table's against the wall, it seems like that the setup is either podcasting or pool, not both.
Yes.
So we've got the podcasting table in the middle.
Yes.
And I assume this table will rescind into the
cupboard
later today, and the pool table makes its way out.
In fact,
the
pool table folds up vertically. That's why we got this. This
actually?
One. It does. Yeah. You see the legs over there, and you take those things out.
You can play some Inception pool.
Since if gravity ever shifts 90 degrees, I'm ready, baby. I only wish that this desk, the podcasting desk, folded away in a similar way so I could facilitate
more. Not enough
more
furniture
pool room.
Folds away.
No, it doesn't. No.
I want one of those beds that disappears into the wall.
But anyway, it seems to be the setup is the wife does the negotiating and posting, and then the hubby does the deal.
Like in person.
Yeah.
So when you show up, it's like...
Yeah.
So hubby will be waiting.
The hubby will be there. I'm out, but the hubby... Let me check with the hubby if we can go. So... Like Ricky and Steve, I have similar feelings about the phrase hubby, the hubby.
I reckon that's a newer one. I don't reckon that existed in 2003.
More Australian, maybe. I don't know. The hubby. Anyway.
Yeah, it is widely used.
And then they get into the things they're embarrassed about at the shops, which are no longer an issue thanks to self-serve checkouts. Kids out there buying condoms, you don't know. The embarrassment.
It could be almost worse now, though, in case there was a problem with them. And someone has to be called over and you have to be like, oh, the condoms didn't go through.
Yeah, the red light flashing. You're right, actually. It could potentially be worse.
This guy's having sex.
What a
weirdo. In case. I want to be prepared.
Break 5 Rockbusters. Did you get any of these? You must have got the first one.
I didn't, embarrassingly.
American Coins, Danny Spine, Nickelback.
Yeah.
The other one, I didn't. Stiff Little Fingers, Jeremy Beadle's Got Arthritis. I didn't understand that. Sure, it's UK reference. Whoever Jeremy Beadle is must have little fingers. And Spin Doctors. Break 6, find out that Carl's paying for his little getaway with his parents. And he doesn't want people to know how generous he is. And then the chat about that, what a leap this next sentence goes through. The chat about how generous Carl is, and they talk about Father's Day. And then they go on to rip off like things that are designed to rip people off, to a floral industry conspiracy.
Well, the other thing that you noticed, helping out the flower companies, the Princess Diana thing when she
Jesus Christ, God.
So when
Carl, what do you mean?
That's what he said. He said,
I nearly swore then because I was, you surprised me
all the time.
No, I'm just...
But that is incredible.
Sorry, what? I don't understand. What are you talking
about? All the flowers that were sort of sold that day.
Right. What, for people to leave as a commemoration?
Yeah, they made a mend, didn't they?
Who did?
Flower companies.
Right, so what
so
are you
you're saying?
So he was just saying, you know, makes you wonder.
What, whether...
About what?
Whether it was in the floor or behind the hit.
My God, you're deep.
He can't really believe that, right? Like, he's made an observation which is the observation of, like, in a moment of national tragedy, there is an increased demand on flowers.
Yes.
That is a true observation.
Yes.
But he can't believe that. There's a conspiracy.
He does bring things to the show that his dad has said, often offensive and ridiculous, but there's a tone of voice and there's a way he tells it that he actually thinks, like,
it's pretty
what do
clever.
You reckon? My dad's onto something here, eh?
Yeah, but does he think it's like a clever kind of thought, or does he actually believe?
It makes you think, doesn't it?
Mad world, don't it?
Yeah, it is an awkward thing. Do you remember the Sydney siege?
Yes. Siege?
So I was living there at the time, went down there the next day after it all wrapped up, and obviously an enormous floral sort of like people thing. A florist had set up a stall right next to where the people were dropping flowers.
That's interesting.
And there was a line down the street, and they were just cranking them out, $30 a pop. People were taking it, walking it over, immediately dropping it in front of the cafe. Makes you think, doesn't it? Steve works out that Elton John was part of the conspiracy as well because he had a hit song. They're talking about conspiracies and they talk about Toblerones next as a Father's Day gift. Here's a conspiracy for you. The gap between peaks in Toblerones has dramatically increased. I don't think that's a conspiracy. I think that's just capitalism.
Oh, yeah. They're just trying to...
Same price, less weight. Less product.
I worked on Toblerone when I was working in advertising for
really?
One
they were
day.
One of your they clients. Were,
well, kind of. What I had to do is I had to come up with a I was copywriting, so I had to come up with a Father's Day caption. Beautiful. Or an Instagram post. Or an Instagram like ad. And they gave me, because you get resourced, so you get like, they tell you how long you have to work on projects. So I had 8 hours. They're like, is 8 hours going to be enough? And I was like, ugh, yeah, I reckon I could get it done in 8 hours. Come up with one Instagram caption. You know what I had got? Which I came up with in the first 30 seconds. I think it was something like, pick chocks, not socks this Father's Day. Something like that. The rest of the 7 hours, 45 minutes off, thank you.
So they don't want a page of options. They want you to provide
no, like
one.
They assume... Oh, no, actually, maybe they did. Yeah. No, that's right. Yeah, I think I provided 10. That's the one they went with, which was the first one I came out with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. I was like, really? Okay, yeah, sure. I'll do this for 8 hours.
And that Instagram like... that Instagram post,
but like the,
got a billion likes.
Everything else has been done. So like the image and the caption on the image and all that. So I just had to come up with the Instagram caption, and I was like, I feel like that's not really like at the end of the day when you go and lie in bed and you think about like big day today. I'm like, oh, those six really? Words really took it out of me.
But just think that if that was the last thing, that means they billed that 8 hours to the company.
That maybe is why they gave me so much time, actually.
And then that means they already billed presumably the same amount of time to.
Well, often what happened too is like you work in a duo.
To schedule it.
So you have a writer and an artist.
Yeah.
Right? And almost always, the other copywriters didn't agree with me when I said this. I felt like this was kind of sacrilegious in a way. I would say, oh, it takes way longer to do the artwork. And they're like, no, it can take a long time to come up with the words. Like that was seemed to be offensive. So often what would happen is they give you both the same time because you're a team. So you get 6 hours. And it would take my partner 6 hours because she had to like do art. Like, and I had to come up with a caption. I'd be done in like 15 minutes. And I'd be like, are you still going?
Yeah, she had to open JPEGs and yeah. click import.
She's like, this is so unfair. Like, you're getting it done so much faster. I'm like, look, that's I didn't invent this system.
Yeah. But what about all the hours it took me to develop these skills?
Or the reading of the dictionary. I played Wordle twice today just to get this old head noggin fresh.
You thought it's only one game per day. How did I do it? Second phone. That's how far I'm willing to go.
Quirtle.
We get a glimpse back in time when they talk about cigarette packets and the warnings on them.
Oh, that's what it was. That's what I was thinking of at the top of the episode. I was like, oh, wow. So plain packaging has just come in, and not only that.
No, they, not even plain packaging.
Oh.
Just ones with the UK this time there's a warning, but then he's saying, oh, I heard in Brazil they have photos of ill people.
Which we've had for 10 years now.
For super long. There's no branding. There's a giant photo of like bloody piss in a toilet bowl. That's one of them.
Is it actually?
Oh, yeah. And it's olive. All the packets are olive green, which apparently is the least appealing color. Which is...
Has that worked?
I don't know. I mean,
I think addiction's an addiction, though.
Not for vaping. But also, you know, a packet of cigarettes is like $50 now?
Yes.
At a minimum?
No, that's, I didn't know that, but that makes sense.
Crazy. In America, you still can get like... Well, last time I was there, which admittedly was...
I imagine they don't have plain packaging.
5 years ago. Not from memory. They got all the brands on them. You can still get a packet for like $5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you know in... the Americans would hate this. You know, in Australia now, if you go into hospital for anything, but you're a smoker, like, I mean, they can't force you to do anything, obviously, but like, as a part of your discharging, you will be like, there's like a smoking education. Well, I don't exactly know what it is, but it's some type of program to like get you off cigarettes, basically. Isn't that remarkable?
Mm.
So it's like, I imagine if you're American, that would be like a real slap in the face for your freedom
to smoke.
Yeah.
So you walk away with like, I had my tonsils removed and I'm enrolled in this. Have a quick
time. See, I don't know if it's like if you have to go somewhere. I don't know if it's – it might be as small as giving you a brochure.
A pamphlet, yeah.
But it is about – there is like – there's an idea that they're getting people off them.
Mm. Oh, nice of them to try. Break 7, people are asking if Carl is real. So we've reached that sort of time in the timeline. I feel like this is actually an important bit to note where people are starting to question if Carl is a real person. So they circle back to his origin story. I do enjoy Carl's logic when Ricky phoned to tell him about gazelles.
So I phoned him and I said, a two-day-old gazelle can run faster than a racehorse. He went, what's it do after that? I went, what? He said, well, how fast can it run when it's adult? I went... Well, even faster. He went, oh, I thought I could just do it then, but then it sort of lost it. I went, what are you talking about? I went, you know, that's incredible. A two-day-old gazelle can run... He went, well, no, that's what they do. I went, what? He went, that's what they do, isn't it? I went, what do you mean? It's 2 days old, right? He went, yeah, but a one-day-old fly can fly. I'm 30 and I can't fly. It's not what I do, right? And I went, right. He went, a jellyfish can hold its breath underwater for hours. I went, it doesn't hold its breath, does it? It hasn't got lungs. So he went...
He's got a point.
I agree with Carl.
I enjoy that.
100%. I think the fly one was a big takedown.
Yeah.
I think he's proved his point.
Whack. They talk about another baby, what had a baby, and then in Break 8 they read the news story to get the actual story.
It's never as entertaining. It's always like a lot sadder.
Well, yeah, you're 4 years pregnant. Yes, it's always, there's life-threatening or tragic. There's some sort of malformation. So Carl then wanted to know, and he approaches this so seriously, if you could have your bones taken out. He thinks it would be good if you lived in a small flat.
What was Ricky's acronym? Did that reveal that
I wrote it down. Support, Protection, Anchorage, Movement. Sorry?
Does that reveal that he's taken some type of anatomy as a part of his education? Like, why would he know that?
But it comes up every now and then that Ricky is interested and quite knowledgeable about scientific things.
Well, I guess he's done a few, like, that was the basis of a lot of his stand-up lectures.
Yeah. He did one called Science. But I imagine that is something you learn in Biology 101, Support, Protection, Anchorage, Movement. I didn't know it. It's one of the things that I've learned thanks to this show.
Or I know Dr. ABC, that's the only one.
Isn't it now longer? Isn't it Doctors?
Yeah, Doctors ABC, which is a less...
Right.
What's it? Danger, response. What's S?
Support?
Airways, breathing. Circulation? Contractions? What's C?
Contractions.
I get the general idea.
Content. You show them a fun TikTok.
Make sure you're filming it.
Yeah. Rick, they talk about anxiety dreams. And we learn about Ricky, where he's at. He had an anxiety dream about filming The Office. He didn't have shoes on, but in his dream he thought, oh, well, so what? So nothing bothers Ricky. And Steve gives a memory of filming The Office pilot.
Obviously, Ricky's the main character. He's in it all the time. It's obviously important. He's had a big chance to get something made for TV. You know, it's going to launch our careers. And I turn up on the Monday. He's twisted his ankle. He has to be wheeled around in a wheelchair because he went out jogging, stepped on a tin can in the street and fell over.
Who left that there?
In Break Night, I just enjoy those, any little tidbits like that, any sort of behind-the-scenes stuff.
The dynamic is really interesting too because Ricky's the star, but it seems to be holding on to it more loosely than...
Yes.
So Steve needs Ricky, but Ricky seems to be hard to pin down.
Yes. Which is impressive. The stakes are the highest, in theory, for Ricky, and he's the one who's... That's fine. I got it. There's a level of sort of confidence, which is...
It's funny also, Steve, in this story, you know, he says this is our big chance.
Mm.
But he and Ricky, even at the start, aren't on the same level. It's Steve's big chance.
Yes.
Like, Ricky's already had a few shows.
Yeah. He's already had Meet Ricky Gervais, and he's been on the 11 o'clock show. In Break 9, Carl thinks he's allowed to talk about freaks because he's friends with Steve. We get monkey news about a monkey who became homeless in Russia, became a squatter, but then there was a bust at the place where they were squatting, and here is the climax of the story.
And they thought it was a real fella at first. They were like, get him, you know, he's obviously just a scruffy bloke who hasn't had a shave and stuff.
Yeah. Hasn't shaved his back for a while.
Or his face.
Yeah.
His head.
Got him down the station, and the boss was like, what's going on here? We've got a monkey here. He was like, what? So you arrested the monkey.
As if, like, they do a double take. Hang on.
What?
That's what that tale was.
In Break 10, Rockbusters answers. Carl has to leave early. They do Cheeky Freak of the Week. And then in Break 11, Carl runs off but then comes back quickly. Ricky and Steve wonder if they don't need him and then encourage people to clog Carl's email over the week that he's away. And that's it. That's it for Series 2, Episode 42 of the Carly Pilk Boys. Back next time with Episode 43. We are getting right towards the end. There's 51 episodes in Series 2, so we're in the final 10. Not sure if we'll get there by the end of this year.
Do our best.
But we'll kick on. We'll probably take a little a break over Christmas. In fact, we will, because we don't want to do this on Christmas Eve.
That's right.
We'll take this conversation off air. But Zach, thank you so much. See you on the next one.
See you, bye.
With a load of effing and jeffing in it.